Sometimes you gotta go back to actually move forward. I don't mean all the way back to dental school. Let's face it, that was an awful experience. But when it's all said and done, you still have questions. That's what Paul and Justin are here for. To answer your questions as your dental business mentors.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Dental Business Mentors. We are your dental business mentors, Dr. Paul Etchison and my partner, Dr. Justin Bullard. What's happening, Justin? How you feeling today?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Had to put out some fires this morning. You know, it's like a cliched statement, but it's a few buzzwords in there. But at the end of the day, that's what it feels like. You got to put out fires. Yeah. That's your job as a business owner, particularly when you have multiple balls you're juggling, you're going to have problems.
No, because
you know what?
No. If you have a good practice, you have no fires. Everybody knows that.
That's true. I've never had a complication placing an implant, taking out wisdom teeth or anything like that either.
Not the mentors. Of course not.
Never. No.
Do you feel like Sharon?
It's so not applicable to 99.9% of dentists that I think it'd be a waste of their time. For that reason, I won't.
There you go. Yeah.
It's a day in the life.
Yeah.
What are you going
to
do?
Sometimes I read the Facebook forums and I say that I have the same question. I said, this is not applicable to anybody. What policy should I have that this so this never happens again? It's like, that's never going to happen again. That's a one-off,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely have one-offs. And then it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you have a single practice, if I focus problems on a single practice and I pull out a single practice issue, that's relatable to the vast majority of owners. But when I start talking about global stuff or real estate development or acquisition or what we're doing with our money at the moment, it doesn't apply to everybody. And so I feel like it's a little bit, this is like first world problems, dude. Nobody cares.
Okay. Well, what is our applicable problem from a listener?
All right. So, dear Dr. E, what do you think is the average collection rate for an office that takes premium insurance or has a fee-for-service patient base? I know ideally it should be in the high 90s, but what I want to know is from real-world dentists, what is the answer to that question? So basically, they're doing fee-for-service or they've eliminated all of the lower reimbursement PPO plans, it sounds like. What should they expect as a collections percentage every month?
I wish I would have followed up with this one because now that you're reading it, I almost wonder if, are they saying what is an acceptable fee for service like after adjustments when there's no write-offs? I'm not really sure the answer to that question, but you read that as like, what should I be collecting? I mean, yeah, we should be collecting the high 90s, but like, how do you read it?
Well, the first thing is here, it really depends on what your policy is with these things. If you're doing a premium insurance plan, are you in network with this plan or are you just simply out of network and accepting it? That makes a difference because if I'm out of network, I can collect the difference between reimbursement and my fee. If I'm in, have a contractual obligation with the company, then I just have to take their fee, in which case my collections is going to be presented as a percentage of the net production and not the gross production. And so the percentage changed,
right?
Like if a company is going to pay me $100, just easy numbers, $100 for the filling, but I charge 110 and I'm in network with them, I have to write off that difference. That's a write-off, which now I'm dealing with an adjusted production number and I'm going to use that to calculate my percentage of collections. If I'm out of network with them, well, then I'm going to collect that fee, right? And so I'm getting 100% of what my fee is for the practice, in which case my net collections is the same as my gross collections, so to speak, right? If I'm fee for service, well, I'm collecting 100% of that from the patient. Okay. And I'm either not submitting to their insurance company at all on their behalf as a service to them, and they're taking care of that, or I am submitting and I'm waiting to get reimbursed for that proportionate share. So this is sort of like convoluted because it's not specific.
I'm going to say, like, for one, do you know any offices that don't submit on the patient behalf?
Yeah.
You do?
Offices that are pure fee for service. Okay. I've got a handful of docs that simply collect 100% of the payment up front.
That's wild.
No, and their practices do between 500 to 800K. The highest grossing practice I've seen personally do that is somewhere around 1.4 million out in Los Angeles, mostly doing cosmetic implant stuff, created this sort of like celebrity status, started treating celebrity patients. But it wasn't the practices we're accustomed to, which are doing 250,000 plus a month insurance based. Totally different markets, right? Like, you're catering to different people there. So, okay. So answer it this way. I'll ask you the question in a different way.
Oh, okay.
If you are a fee-for-service doc who is either in network or not, but calculating your percentage of collections, right, based on the reimbursement, what should you expect? What would your answer be to that? What should you expect as a collection percentage?
I would say, gosh, I would say 99, 100. I don't ever want to say 100, but part of me is thinking, yeah, why couldn't it be 100 if you're collecting up front and you're choosing your own fees? And if you make some insurance, I guess you might make some insurance mistakes and you might do some solids for patients and do some like family discounts and stuff. But I think it's just like everything. It's like if we look at adjusted production in a PPO practice, it's the same thing. 99%, 98, 99%, right at that 100 mark. And I see offices collecting 100. When you look at it month by month, sometimes you'll collect 105%. When you average it out for trailing 12, it should be about 99%. I think if anyone's having issues with that, the biggest thing that I often see in my clients' offices is that we have an AR report that doesn't mean anything. We have an AR report that says, well, it says this, and it's always got this asterisk. Well, there's some ortho, and well, there's some payment plans in there. Well, there's this. And the fact of the matter is we need that as a dashboard to drive our offices. And if we don't have an accurate AR report, we can't even see what we're doing. What are our collections problem? We can't even diagnose it. So when I look at offices that have that, I typically say, you got to clean the AR report up. You've got to figure out a way that it makes sense. I don't know if that's creating different chart subtypes for different things, for different special situations, so you can run a report and exclude those, but you've got to do that. The easiest way, and it's, guys, I love when, not that I love it, but I love when my clients have collection problems because they're so stinking easy to fix. At my office, we say, if the payment's not in, the burr doesn't spin. That's it. Don't you start that procedure unless it's paid for, or you've got a payment plan set up where it's not like you're paying over 4 months and we're going to send you a statement and you'll mail it in with the check. No, it is set up where it's auto draft. We don't have to do it anymore. The last thing I want my front desk to be doing is doing a transaction that should take one swipe and doing it 7 or 8 times. It's we're setting it and we're forgetting it and we're getting paid and we're getting emailed or getting some sort of notification if for some reason that payment doesn't go through. But if you don't start a procedure until, like, if you get the patient portion before you do the procedure, you should not have any issues with patient portion unless you make an insurance estimate and make something incorrect there. And that's a whole nother thing. I mean, that's a whole nother area to look at. But there's only certain finite amount of places that balances will come from, patients or insurance. When we're talking about patients, it comes down to, did we collect it and did we estimate it correctly? And we're talking about insurance. It's, did we estimate it correctly and did we submit correctly and did we follow up? Because we all know that insurances like to do the big 3 Ds, deny, decline, and delay. They do that. So we've got to stay on top of them. So that is my collections seminar in a 2-minute nutshell. Take it for what it's worth. Back to you, Justin Blair.
Amen.
Holla.
Holla. You've covered all the main bullet points. What I will say is, if you are a fee-for-service, I'll reiterate some of the things you said and validate those to some extent. It's, if you are a fee-for-service practice, you should be collecting 100%. If you are only taking premium insurance, meaning you've eliminated all the low reimbursement insurance companies and you only accept a few, it's best for you, in my opinion, to be out of network with them so that you can collect the difference and you're not writing anything off. Again, you should be collecting 100%. Now, if you are in network with them, whatever that write-off is, 10%, 20%, 30%, if you were to include that, let's say it's a 30% write-off on everything, just for simplicity. Well, your highest collection rate can be 70%, right? If you get everything from the insurance company, they're reimbursing you.
Yeah, you can't.
So, but you don't
you
do,
can't
it that
do it that way.
Way.
No, that, yeah.
You can't do it that way. So you base that number on the adjusted production. So you've removed that 30% write-off. Then you assume you're collecting 100% of what the insurance is giving you. And if you have the systems in place for that, then you should be very close to that.
Where does the 1% go? Why is it 98.99?
So I think what ends up happening is there's claims that are not submitted. There's primary or secondary. Maybe they haven't submitted a secondary. They haven't collected that money. So there's a lag or there's a improper system in place where the office is not actually submitted or followed up. So they write off these 90-day balances, right? They haven't collected a lot of those, or that 90 day is a little out of whack.
But I just wonder, it's like we always say, shoot for 98.99. Are we setting the bar too low, guys? Like, are we just giving up 1%? If we had 100% office collections, could our front desk members sit there and go, I could probably pick off 1% of this and put it in my pocket and nobody notice?
Yeah, I think what ends up happening is there's the piece where did you collect from the insurance company or not? And then did you collect the difference, right? If it depends on how your practice is set up, right? And if you're in certain contractual obligations, then there's what did I refund to patients, right? Was there some sort of refund, right?
Yeah. Okay. There's the 1%.
Then if you factor in, let's say you got these payment plans, the company may give you the money up front, but they've taken a piece from you, right? So you're not collecting that. You're not collecting 100% of what the patient owes. You're removing what you pay the third party in terms of either interest or lump sum fee.
Like when
you
factor those things in, that's like care credit.
That's
stuff
the
like
financing
that.
Piece. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So when you factor all that in, you're not going to be at 100% unless you're fee for service. I don't know. We're collecting 100%. Even then, those payment plans are going to ding you a little bit. So I say if you're above 97.5%, 98%, then you're probably doing pretty good. I wouldn't be too worried about it. I'd spend more time on increasing revenue than worrying about collecting that extra 1.5%. It's likely if you go back and do an audit on that 1.5% to make you feel better, it's likely the reasons we've just stated. And so your time is better spent elsewhere. As long as it's not lag on your end in terms of submission, as long as your team is actually following up and getting reimbursed, like you're getting the insurance money that you deserve to be reimbursed, then there's really not a big concern here. If you're in the low 90s, either you're calculating your percentage incorrectly, or you need to do a better job with implementing systems in the practice for collections, right? Like low 90s to me is not acceptable on a given month, but on a quarterly as you average it out or the trailing 12, no, that's not acceptable. I need to see something that's above 98%. And that's where we routinely are.
And do you typically see when you look at offices like that, and this is what I typically see, it's a system thing. 100%. More or less, it's a toleration thing. It's like, I will accept that this is not paid for. And I think it's just people are just blind. If I had to look at an AR report, which you should print at least monthly, if not twice a month, is if I look at an AR report and there's a big balance on the plus 90, I'm going to look at that and go, that doesn't belong there. But in a lot of these offices that have dirty AR and it's just so old, there's balances for 2 years. You get another balance on your plus 90, you're like, eh, you don't even notice it because there's so much crap in there anyway. This is why you need a clean AR report. You got to clean it up.
To me, accounts receivable and keeping it clean is one of the simplest things we do because there's only 4 or 5 components that you have to routinely pay attention to. It's the simplest thing. As long as you're consistently doing those 3 to 5 basics, depending on how much insurance you take versus if you're fee for service. If you're routinely doing those things, you are going to have a good collection percentage. If you're not, just go back and ask yourself which of those 3 to 5 you're not doing, right? And then voila, focus on the problem and it's gone. It's not like things that take a lot longer to correct, like productivity, for example, like that can take a little bit longer to correct because you got to get maybe more education. You have to revise the schedule. Maybe you need more new patients and there's more complicated factors there. Collections is straightforward. As long as you know how to get those funds and you have someone who's accountable for running that system, then it's going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a solid verbiage for, I forgot my wallet?
Those things are dealt with by front-end team members, and there's multiple ways to deal with that.
You know how I deal with person? If somebody said it and I was at the front desk, I'd be like, oh, you're good for it, man. We're good. It's cool. Not too nice.
Yeah, we don't get that a lot.
No, we don't either.
The key is like communication with people up front, right? This is what you can expect to pay at the time of your appointment, right? If you've done the appropriate audit on the insurance, you know what's covered, you know what they've done that year, you know what's remaining. You could generally predict what's going to be the patient portion, if any at all, right? Like I said, there's no patient portion if you're in network with certain companies. But if you are that practice who's running out of network or fee for service, you should just anticipate what that patient portion is, prepare them for that. And then collect it. Some offices collect up front. Some do it after service. We've always done it after the service is done because that always felt right to us. It felt right that you pay for the groceries at the time of checkout. That kind of concept, you know, psychologically, it's easier. It's like versus like you're paying for something and you're not even in the chair yet. There's no right or wrong. I'm just telling you the way we've done it. And we have not had an issue with people paying. If we do, then we collect. And if we have to write off those balances, we don't do business with those people anymore.
What about somebody coming in? And this is why we collect at front is for one, we're not going to start a procedure unless it's paid for.
Perfectly fine.
What if, and I wonder if this happens at your office, because this used to happen at mine when we collected after, is people go, whoa, that's not what I was supposed to pay. No. And we're like, yeah, well, you signed this. And they're like, well, no, I can't pay that.
Yeah. Those things you hope with part of your system, with your treatment coordinator, with your front-end team members should be documentation, right? So they should have that patient signed it, you've signed it, you've got it scanned into the system. All I got to do is print it. I don't need a conversation. I just hand them the piece of paper and say, oh, it was our understanding that we agreed to this.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess it's the way you just approach it.
In my experience, most people the vast majority pay their bills. The vast majority of people are not trying to play these games with you. And those that are, just get rid of them, right? There's no sense in dealing with someone who argues over the bill every time. Let them go deal with somebody else. They're not going to be at our practice very long.
Yeah. We should do an episode on getting rid of people. I would love to get rid of.
Yeah. Amicable separation.
Let's do that next time. Okay. I'm gonna ask that a listener writes that in to us so we can do it next time.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, dentalbusinessmentor.com. Check out our site, the subscriptions month to month. Lots of videos on there. Go check that stuff out. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Your practice is pretty good, but you know it could be better, right? What if you had all the systems necessary, had the buy-in from your team, and had the leadership and management structure so you didn't have to shoulder all the practice management yourself? I am so excited to announce that my new 7-phase coaching program is designed to do just that. My leadership team and I take you and select members of your office through 7 phases of systematizing, training your team on all the systems, getting every system documented, and most of all, teaching your team how to help you manage and grow your practice. By combining online instruction, sample documents, worksheets, exercises, we present you and your team over 35 hours of training in 9 different curriculum tracks based on the position in the office, and best yet, we coach you through it. At the end of the 10-month program, you have a fully systematized practice with a new leadership structure in place, and your practice will run smoother than it ever has. This program is special because we get the team involved and change the way your practice gets things done. Go to dentalpracticeheroes.com. Check out the OmniPractice Total Team Success Program. We offer one-on-one coaching as well as group coaching options, not to mention a la carte mini courses. We just finished our first batch of offices, and we are starting a new 10-month group program in August. We're only taking 12 offices, so if you want to get in on that, better get in on it. There's just way too much to explain in a small commercial, so go to the website to learn more about the OmniPractice Program, dentalpracticeheroes.com.